Well, joining us now from the University of Melbourne Law School is Professor Jane Kay, and she's here on the line to discuss with us about who owns your DNA. Good morning, Doctor.
Hello, how are you?
Professor, sorry, I'm very good, thank you. So, who actually owns your DNA? That's a very fascinating question to ask. I mean, we're in a day and age of technology, everyone wants to know where they've come from, but do they actually own their DNA?
So that's a really good question, and it's really unsettled in terms of law. And the thing is that DNA can be a sample, so that it's found in every cell of your body. But once it's extracted from your body and you end up with a string of base pairs, then it becomes information. So we've got the law that applies to two different physical entities, the samples and the information. And DNA is something that is also shared with other family members.
Mm-hmm.
So that information is really important for other family members as well as you. But the law basically says that in terms of samples, you do not own parts of your body once they've been removed from you. But they've also said that there's a number of exceptions to that. And the first one is that when somebody has exercised work and skill over sample, then they actually obtain some property rights in it. So an example of that would be if a researcher took a blood sample from you with consent, and then they processed it to actually identify the genome sequence that is relevant to you and to that cell in your body. And the courts have said, well, in that case, the researcher would have some limited property rights. But you yourself would not have any rights. But there are a few exemptions to this. But it's a very grey and contested area of the law. So, for instance, in the ACT, in the case of a man who passed away and had stored sperm, they said that in actual fact, that came under his will and was property under the Administrative and Probate Act in the ACT. They've also said that the courts in the UK have also said that if men who had stored sperm after cancer treatment and then the sperm was destroyed after the hospital fridges failed could actually have damages for the destruction of that sperm. But they didn't actually say it was property rights, but they did give benefits back to the men. So we actually have a very contested area of law, and maybe thinking about ownership and property rights really isn't the right way to think about interests in DNA.
And in what way do you think we should look at those interests of DNA then?
So I think we sort of are starting to realise that in this complex world where DNA is being used in a number of different ways, so it's being used for research purposes to understand how genetic inheritance affects disease, it's being used in the clinic to help us diagnose treatment plans for cancer, it's being used for crime detection, we have a National Criminal Investigation DNA database, and then increasingly it's being used for ancestry testing and things like that. We realise that in actual fact, we are thinking more in terms about it being something that is shared between people, so that just kind of thinking about it in terms of ownership is not very useful. We should be thinking about it in terms of shared rights and for people being able to access DNA samples of relatives, for instance, if that can help in the treatment of their condition, if it can give them insights into whether they are susceptible or have a higher risk of a disease. And what's very interesting, I think, is that we should draw on Indigenous concepts of the way that people are connected through their DNA, that this goes back into long history of kind of ancestry and people being connected together. We don't really have any nice ways of dealing with that in law. And I think we need to be more imaginative about how we think about DNA, who has access to it, when they have access, and on what basis.
And so my next question really is, going back to, we're all happy to, you know, if we want a DNA test, we're happy to give samples to find out where we come from. But other than that, giving access, as you said before, we don't tend to like. It raises privacy concerns. Why do you reckon it raises privacy concerns, and how can we remedy that sort of issue?
We've been developing at the University of Oxford and in the University of Melbourne. So I have a dual appointment between the University of Oxford and University of Melbourne. What we've been developing is some software that enables people to know how their information's being used, but also to be able to consent to the use of the information. And this came out of, this is called dynamic consent, this approach, and it came out of my concerns that people weren't being able to activate or give voice to the rights that they had in law to control their privacy interests. So we've been working on software that will enable people to actually give consent and revoke consent in real time, but most importantly, receive information about how the information is being used. And at this point in time, we're just thinking about this within the medical research context, but of course it has broader application. And the way that this technology could help is actually enable people also to give permission for other people to access their information, or for other family other family members to know certain information that might actually help them. So I think we can actually, rather than probably going down the rabbit hole of thinking about property rights, it might be better if we started thinking about tools and ways that we could actually help people know more information about how their data is being used, but also the implications of using data, because it's a lot easier in some ways, in the case of samples and data, we can consent to the use of samples and data, but once it's sort of left us, it's a lot harder for us to have control over samples and data. So if you have a digital interface that enables you to know what's happening to samples and data, it moves us away from property rights, but actually respects the autonomy of individuals and respects the fact that samples and information are actually being provided by them.
Definitely food for thought. Well, Professor, that's all we have time for this morning. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for your time.
That's Professor Jane Kay, the University of Melbourne Law School, Director of the Centre for Health, Law and Engineering Technologies.